Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Julia Malley, whose new novel is Pelican Girls. Novelist Julia Malley found her inspiration for the novel Pelican Girls on a trip to New Orleans in 2017. She visited archives at the Historic New Orleans Collection, Tulane University, and the Ursuline Convent, and unearthed the story of French women who immigrated to Louisiana during the colonial era. Pelican Girls is a story of survival on the frontier, female friendship, the changing lives of women, and a portrait of an era that ranges from Paris to New Biloxi to New Orleans and Natchez. It is beautiful, unforgettable, and powerful. Julia Malley is the author of three novels published in French. This is her first to be published in English. She appears at the 38th Annual Tennessee Williams and New Orleans Literary Festival this weekend. I'm so glad to have you here in person instead of on the phone.
It's an honor. I'm so happy to be here too.
So what was it like with that first trip to New Orleans? Did you know what you were looking for, or was this a happy accident?
I sort of knew what I was looking for, although I would say that when you start conducting research, especially about women, you never exactly know what you are going to find, and you're always surprised at what you actually unravel. But I came here after reaching out to one of these women's descendants, and so I was in touch with Randall Lanier. He had pointed out a few collections, so I went to Tulane. I visited the Ursuline Convent.
That must have been fun.
It was.
And it looms large in your book.
Absolutely. And I guess I was also looking for those tiny details, that very vivid ones that transcend time, and that I would be able to use in order to build the descriptions, the setting of the novel. So I was also jotting down all of those down in my mm-hmm. notebook.
Now, one of the books I know that inspired you so much was Joan Dijon's History of Mutinous Women, and that was nonfiction work about women who came over from basically the same place on a different ship.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I actually discovered Joan Dijon's book when it was published in 2022. And so by then, I'd been working on Pelican Girls I started in 2016. So yeah, for about 6 years. And so it was amazing to see all of this amazing research that had been done on the topic. And so yeah, by then the book had been bought by an American, a French editor. And it was amazing to have Joan Dijon's book as this travel companion, you know, for the last...
The home stretch.
Exactly, for the home stretch. That was the word I was looking for.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. So tell us about this historical era and why it attracts you.
Well, what really struck me was the very fact that these women had been entirely forgotten. And I guess I was really interested in the very ambivalent role that they had played, in the sense that they were sent to Louisiana in order to marry French settlers. So they didn't go exactly from their own free will. And then, I mean, we could also, they volunteer, quote unquote, but then what does it mean for a woman back in the 18th century to have agency? And I think that's a question that's unfortunately still relevant today.
Yes.
in many, many cases. So there were victims in one sense, but their very presence here in Louisiana also fed into this broader system of oppression, which is colonialism. And so I was interested in this duality, in writing characters that would be nuanced, complex, that you would feel empathy for as a reader, but whose action you could at times also condemn.
Now tell us first where they came from in Paris, because that's a very important part of your story.
Yeah, absolutely. So they came from La Salpêtrière. And so La Salpêtrière today, it's one of the largest hospitals in France. You can still visit it today. It still feels haunted. Some parts, there is the church that is described in my novel still stands. The women's prison is still there. Just going back there, that was also part of the research process, visiting those other places in Paris. And La Salpêtrière, back then, when these women were jailed there, because really, I think we can talk about a carceral environment in the sense that right. they couldn't leave it if they wanted to. But it was basically this big institution where the king had decided to send all of the poor people, people who were considered as marginal, as are struggling with their mental health. And so they would be sent to this institution, which quickly turned into this sort of dystopia.
Yeah.
Because yes, it was a shelter, but at the same time, those people couldn't leave. And so it's interesting to look even at the names of the dormitories. Some of them are called the dormitory for epileptic women, you know, the dormitory for young boys. And so you can see how this very strict hierarchy that exists within this world, and it is really a city outside of the city, because back then La Salpêtrière, today it's in the 13th arrondissement of mm-hmm. Paris, but back then it was still in the countryside.
But you can see it when you read this book. It's yeah. incredibly creepy.
I mean, yeah, it is. So. It is terrifying.
Oh, now they were chosen by the directress, these women, and they were sent to the colonies, and they were orphans, prisoners, mental patients, but they all had to be of childbearing age.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
That was so. Of course, it was a kind of slavery.
Well, yeah, they were deported there. I mean, they didn't exactly choose to go to Louisiana. And it's interesting to see the different sort of profiles, right? That mm-hmm. So, and I think in the book, this is what I try to go for in the sense of We have the three main characters.
Tell us a little bit about these three characters.
Yeah. So we have Genevieve, who was jailed after she helped other women get abortions, which was then considered a crime and is an idea that is yet very unfortunately coming back in this extremely upsetting way. Mm-hmm. So she was jailed for that. And then we have Petroni, who was sent to the Maison de Correction because she was a disappointment to her family. She would never be what her family wanted her to be. So I guess the Maison de Correction, that was an opportunity to talk about this one place where women, girls would be sent there by their families for very silly reasons.
Yeah.
Such as came back from an evening dancing a bit too late, didn't want to marry the man that their father had chosen for them. And then there is the Charlotte who is only 12 when she
yes.
yeah when she leaves for Louisiana, and she has only known the walls of the hospital, and so she's one of the many orphans that grew up at La Salpêtrière.
Now this book to me is just dense with the texture of life. What they wore, what they ate, what they grew, what their houses looked like, everything. How long did you research the history and domestic life?
Yeah, I spent 8 years working on this book, both conducting research and writing. And I guess those details about what everyday life felt like, mm-hmm. Those are the hardest to find in a way.
Interesting.
Because the mundane, what we pay little attention to, and yet what is so important in our daily lives, that doesn't really get into the historical records. Mm-hmm. It's more like the extraordinary or that one key historical event. So finding those significant details that would really help me immerse readers into the lives of these women, that was a challenge. Finding also information about them as women was also extremely challenging. And so I mostly worked with secondary sources, mm-hmm. And I conducted research in order to know what it could have been like to be a French woman in Louisiana back in the 1720s, a woman who had traveled on La Baleine. And so sort of seeing what were the possible fates, and then within that, how could I build character that were then mine, but working also with the passenger list from La Baleine, which is a really striking document. One, that, you know, you just have like the first name, the last name, and then the age for each woman. And it's really heartbreaking.
Where is it?
It's in the French archives. And I also read it in, so the descendant I mentioned earlier on, he sent me a self-published book, which I started working with back in 2016. And he had compiled all of the information that he could find about these women. And what really struck me, what I found so upsetting, was that for some of them, he had just written those few lines that read, if you have more information about this young lady, please do reach out to me. And it read like a missing person, report. And that was just, and obviously we would never be, or it would be extremely rare to find something. So they were really lost sort of in the cracks of time, of history. So this is why I really wanted to try and research their story.
If you've just joined us, we've been talking with novelist Julia Malley, whose new novel is Pelican Girls. We'll be right back. You have everything in here, from botany and healing arts and plants to legal matters. Yeah. So that must have been really interesting.
And it truly felt like each chapter was sort of its own microcosm. Mm-hmm. And so what I researched about La Salpêtrière would be of little use when I would actually start writing chapter 10, which is told from the point of view of a young Natchez woman, which raised so many questions when I started researching, when I started conducting research for that very chapter. Who am I as a French person to put myself, to anchor myself in the thoughts of a young native person. But I guess it did feel really important to replace the existence of these French women in a much broader historical context, and to try and shift perspective, because obviously to these French women, Louisiana is this unknown territory, but it is very much subjective, right? And there are so many nations that are where they arrive, and it is their land. So,
but the young indigenous woman is one of the most interesting characters too.
Yeah.
I totally believed you were her.
Well,
right, it's very beautiful, that chapter.
It was a challenge, and I asked myself how to ethically conduct research. I reached out to the chief of the Natchez Nation, and we were in touch for several years, and he was kind enough to help me with the Natchez language, with naming those female characters, and he was extraordinarily generous. He reread every single part of the book that features native characters, so that was extremely useful to work with the native sources that he pointed out to me. And I was struggling to find.
Wow. What is it like for you now to be here after all this time?
It's immensely moving. I was at Tulane yesterday, and this is also where my research started. So it feels like coming back full circle. And you know, when the plane was landing 2 days ago, I looked at the landscape unfolding under us, and it just struck me how little the women I wrote about could see from where they arrived, right? From a boat.
Right.
And so sort of shifting perspective and even seeing all of the lights, I arrived, it was like twilight, but still there were so, the lights were, but how it must have been pitch dark, how dense the vegetation, the woods, the bayou must have been, how much more so than today. And so sort of juxtaposing those two moments in time and seeing and being so struck again by their experience and by the, what mm-hmm. they must have been through when they first discovered this territory that really didn't want from them at all.
So talk about the process of writing this book. It took a long time, and you are a translator. So you wrote this in French and in English. So how did that work?
Yeah, so this book was born in English, and then it grew for 6 years in English. And then in 2021, my agent, a few weeks before she submitted the book to French, American, British editors, she asked me, well, what about the French? And for me, I guess, I was very curious to see how my characters would speak to me when they came back to their mother tongue, because these women, right. they have never spoken a word of English, right?
Interesting.
And so my agent asked me to translate the first chapter in French. And you know, when I do translation work for Les Belles Lettres, my job is to keep in mind the intentions of the writer, to stay as close as I can to the text, and then to find those creative ways to bring that language from one culture to the that one text from one language and from one culture to the next. But the thing is, when I was working with my own writing, I
sure.
didn't have to respect myself. I could just do whatever. That one image could turn into something different. This one metaphor could disappear if all of a sudden it just felt like mm-hmm. it shouldn't be there. And then the characters, they weren't speaking in the same ways. They were
interesting.
Yeah, and there were questions, you know, that I suddenly asked myself that never crossed my mind when I was writing in English, for example. Did these women say tu or vous, which are the formal uh-huh. and informal ways
of address.
Of addressing yeah, someone in French? And what does that show about how close they are becoming? So all of those questions, and the thing is too, was that I kept on discovering new things about the story. So it's as if there was this one unique story I was trying to tell. And I needed both languages in order to unravel
sure.
to unravel what the characters wanted to say. And so I would basically write from sort of go from the English to the French, then I would discover something as I was working in the French, and I would return to the English manuscript and then rewrite it into that language as well. Then I would discover that maybe I needed just 3 lines to say the exact same thing, and I would return into the French, you know. And so it was sort of this creative process that I learned so much. It felt like the book was teaching me how to write it.
Oh, sure.
And so that was really fun, exhusting at times.
So do you think you'll translate all your own books in the future because of this?
I'm not sure. I really want to continue writing both in English and in French, but I don't want that process to become systematic.
Sure.
In the sense that otherwise it just feels like I will tell half as many stories as I could, you know, because it takes so much time to just do it in both languages. But I think maybe more recently I was working on essays, and those were born in English, and I wrote a short story, and this one came out in French. And so I think it's also, it depends on the topic, it depends on mm-hmm. where I am, what I'm reading then. And I think the Pelican Girls, La Louisiane, there is something so deeply transatlantic about the story that it
sure.
also made very much sense for me to work between two languages.
Well, let me ask you to read a little bit so listeners can get a sense of your voice in English.
The women have children. Some of them would rather have remained girls, spouses, but even they were aware it wasn't likely. They knew that one day their bellies would swell, that they wouldn't be quite alone anymore in La Louisiane. The children are called Mélanie, Hugo, Émile. their names don't matter. Just like the women's, they will be forgotten. The children were born in the Mississippi. By now, they are old enough to ask questions. They always were. It only took their mothers time to figure out what they were asking. There was a time, not so long ago, when their mothers had the same questions. They too were new to the colony. They couldn't have known the name of the local canoes, whether this flying creature was a huge insect or a miniature bird, or why the sun set so early here. It took the women years to understand what surrounded them. They want to spare their children the confusion, the faux pas, the delusions, the bitter feeling that this land doesn't want them any more than Paris and their hometowns did. So they say hastily, a pierrot, a hummingbird. The sun is a mystery to us all, a honey. The children have other questions, ones that the women are shyer to answer. If you didn't grow up here, then where did you? Where is France? Does it still exist? Will we go one day? No, the women say. They brush away the memories of their own mother, of the half-broken stool they used to sit on by their parents' bed, of the fireplace that sometimes smoked so badly they tasted ash on their lips, of all the places they'll never see again. The women stroke the children's heads, the perfect skin of their cheeks. They kneel by them, point at the garden, the hills, the forests, the pelicans gathered by the water. They hope their voices won't break, and yet at times they do. Look, they say, our life is here. As if to answer them, the birds fly away, their wet wings flapping in the evening air. The children sit on the women's laps. They watch the pelicans hover, circle above the green river.
Nice. Thank you.
Thanks.
So, how did you feel when you finished this book? It's so shocking to me how close these issues are to us now. Wasn't it to you?
Absolutely. And I think that immersing readers in another time and immersing myself, traveling back in time, spending my 20s in Louisiana in the 18th century, this is what it is all about, right? Sort of
right.
Pinpointing those broader themes that still resonate, that still feel relevant. That is, so, like, for example, sorority, love, loss. What are the sort of bubbles, of cocoons, of agency, of freedom that these women found for themselves, oftentimes in the domestic private sphere that were denied to them at home? And how is that still relevant today? We're talking about abortion earlier on, but there are, I think, many other struggles that we still share with these women.
Oh, so many, so many. This is incredible. It's a wonderful book, as you know.
Thank you. Thank you. That means the world to me.
Oh, we've been talking with Julia Malley, whose new book is Pelican Girls. You can meet her at this weekend's Tennessee Williams and New Orleans Literary Festival at the Hotel Monteleone. When she appears on a panel, Making an Entrance, New Fiction Voices with Style, Saturday, March 23rd at 11:30, and again Saturday at 2:30 for a discussion, History is My Muse, Finding Present Inspiration in the Past. Julia, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Brad Gooch signs Radiant, The Life and Line of Keith Haring. Friday, March 22nd at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Poets Peter Cooley, author of Accounting for the Dark, and Maeve Holler, author of How to Leave Your Family, appear Saturday, March 23rd at 2 at Blue Cypress Books. One Book, One New Orleans presents Sky Jackson leading an ekphrastic poetry workshop. Sunday, March 24th from noon to 2 at the Ogden Museum of Art. Free, but get tickets at Eventbrite. Terrace Marie discusses and signs her debut novel, Black Pearl, Thursday, March 28th at 6 at Baldwin & Company. Percival Everett discusses and signs his new novel, James, Saturday, March 30th at 4 at Baldwin & Company. His book, Erasure, was the basis for the film American Fiction. This is a ticketed event. The 38th annual Tennessee Williams and New Orleans Literary Festival is underway now through March 24th. Check out TennesseeWilliams.net for the complete schedule. Writers coming include Cynthia Carr, Michael Cunningham, Maureen Corrigan, Brad Gooch, Julia Malley, Calm Tobin, Justin Torres, and many others. And don't forget Saints and Sinners, the LGBTQ literary festival that runs concurrently that same weekend at the Hotel Monteleone. Check out sassfest.org. Also coming up, Books Along the Tesh takes place April 5th through 7th in New Iberia. Check out booksalongthetesheliteraryfestival.com for more info. The Friends of the Jefferson Public Library Big Book Sale is coming up April 12th through 13th at the Pontchartrain Center in Kenner. And the New Orleans Poetry Festival's Cubes are out. You can get your complete schedule at nolapoetry.com and start planning. The festival runs April 18th through 21st at various locations and expands statewide with the New Orleans Poetry Festival Roadshow starting April 16th. Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, with major support from Rouse's Markets. Additional support comes from the Hellis Foundation, the Jefferson Parish Public Library, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org.